Our next speaker is David Caulfield. Is he here? Oh, good.
Thank you,
sir. David Caulfield has written and published 10 novels and numerous short stories and magazine articles, as you can read on page 3. And we're very happy to have him here to speak about FWP materials as a resource for the novelist. David Caulfield.
Can you all hear me in the back? Yeah, microphone seems pretty good. I was going to wear a jacket, but I saw everybody else was so casual, I would be as well. For me, as a historic novelist, the overriding resource for Florida research is, and there's no other for me, is the guide. And that's what I'm going to talk about today. I was on my second copy of the guide. The first was pretty dog-eared when I got a call from a television producer in Miami. And she said that she wanted to make a elaborate documentary on the writers of Key West. And I said, gee, that sounded like a good idea. You know, we have, over the years, had something like 20 Pulitzer Prize winners writing in Key West. There are 7 now, 55 full-time writers, everyone from Wallace Stevens to John Hersey. And I said, that would be terrific, and I would help her if I could. And she asked if I could take her around and show her Key West literary homes. And I said, certainly. And she got there, and I said, would you like to take a walking tour? And she said, no, I don't walk. And I said, well, would you like to bike around? Because it's a very nice way to see Key West. She said, no, I do not bike. So we got into this van that looked like a bubble. And I took her down. I had her driver take us to something called the Southernmost Pink House, which is different from the Southernmost House, which is an elaborate 1880s building. The Southernmost Pink House was, until recently, a 1940s CBS cottage and very nice, facing the Atlantic. About a year ago, an acquaintance of mine bought it and turned it into the Southernmost Pink Palace. That's another story. Anyway, we got to this cottage, and I explained to my new friend, the producer, that Thelma Strobel, the historic novelist, had built it. She had written a novel called Reap the Wild Wind, which took place in Key West, 19th century, and she had gone to L.A. and turned it into a film, very successful. You can still see it on late-night obscure cable vision channels. And she had gotten what Thelma had called a goodly sum of money, and with some of that money, she built the Southernmost Pink House. And then I turned to my producer friend, and I said, have you read it? And she said, I only read literature. And I said, I really jerked too with this one. I thought that was this was the answer to a question I've had for ever since I started reading. And I said, how can you tell? And she said it wonderfully well in the ovate tones of the forever certain. She said, literature is filled with big ideas. Well, that seemed to me a fairly good business. And I ran to my Webster's just to make sure. And what Webster said was, literature is writings having excellence of form or expression and expressing ideas of permanent or universal interest. Well, in that event, Reap the Wild Wind is not literature. She's right. There's no ideas of permanent or even universal interest there. It's just a little dubious Key West history and mostly mere and welcome entertainment. And I'm sorry to report that looking over, because I was so involved with the guide at the time, and I still am, I must say, it's one of those books I read consistently, it is not, according to the producers and Mr. Webster's definition, literature. It is more of a, well, it's a resource. It's filled with, every page is filled with tons of small ideas, many of permanent interest. What it is really is a fertile Elysian field for the Florida historical novelist, which is me. For anyone contemplating writing a novel about Florida, is there anyone here hard at work? There's always one or two. takes place in a part of our... The guide is a wonderful travel resource. It certainly doesn't talk about the Florida Turnpike or I-95, but it does give you a very genuine sense of what the cities and towns look like in the 30s, and the streets in most of the plazas and squares are still existent. So just using the guide, you could find your way around, say, downtown Ocala. It's quite easy, even though you can't get around outside Ocala, which probably wasn't there. What's more important is, especially for a novel as a resource, is the guide tour section offers a great deal of period societal information, which is often masked as touristy chit-chat, but it's still there. For instance, in the pages devoted to Palm Beach, the guide informs us that there are only two movie theaters in Palm Beach, and both of those are closed during the long summer. This gives us a pretty good idea of how lively Palm Beach was in the summer in those days. But infinitely more important is later, buried between two paragraphs about la-di-da social events, there is this stopper of a sentence, and you could easily build your novel upon it, and that is, quote, Palm Beach has no Negro settlement, and Negroes are not allowed on the streets after dark unless actively employed in the city. That's said in very straightforward, natural prose, but it really is packed with emotion, especially for someone reading it today, I suspect. Perhaps the most revealing, and I do think this is deliberate, of aspect of the guide, is the thorough indictment of the shameful way that the Negroes, they call them Negroes here, we call them blacks, now somebody else is calling them African Americans, whatever, but they, I use Negroes because they did. Anyway, the Negroes are uniformly treated in 1930s, and the guide does this without rhetoric, without great emotion. It's usually by the mere reportage of what was going on then. They're dry and they're vivid paragraphs, but they're devoted to black culture and black living conditions in Florida, and they're eye-opening, and they're extremely important, and they're among the best in the guide. And this is vital material for anyone who's contemplating writing a novel about Florida. I think even a contemporary novel about Florida. It certainly helps us to understand a lot of what's going on in Tampa yesterday and Miami last week, and the roots of it can be found right here in the guide. One of the numerous nuggets of information the guide gives in its historical section about in the way blacks were treated during the second Spanish occupation. This was after the British had Florida for two decades. And I think these blacks had been brought in by the British during that 20-year occupation. Anyway, during the second occupation in 1810, black children were allowed to go to the school in St. Augustine, but they couldn't come inside. They had to sit outside and listen by the window and the doors to get any sort of information. Again, there it is. You could sit down right now and write your book. I find another great virtue of the guide as a resource is the consistently provocative, detailed information that it provides, often in colorful period prose. I love picking up period phrases. One of the reasons that the writing is so uneven in the guide is that, yes, the guides had their Studs Terkels and Ralph Ellisons and Stetson Kennedys, but they also had what the director, Henry Ellsberg, called near and occasional writers. So occasionally, you find some near and occasional prose. It's like all those people who come to Key West who say they're writers, but they're unpublished and unwritten. And so there is. Anyway, here's a description of St. Petersburg, which could provide the scene for any number of novels, television series, operas, what have you. And in fact, it really was the setting for a short story that had been written prior to the publication of the guide by Ring Lardner. It's a famous story called The Golden Wedding. Here's a description. More than 5,000 green benches in recreation centers and flanking the sidewalks of the principal thoroughfares have converted the city into a park. The benches are the open-air offices of the promoter, the hunting grounds of the real estate bird dog, a haven for the lonely, and a matrimonial bureau for many. They have figured in fiction, swindles, and divorce courts. There, I mean, it wouldn't take Sidney Sheldon or Charles Dickens, for that matter, to have a go at that and to get started. There are many other numbers of such evocative observations. I found especially riveting, and here I suspect a near writer was at work, a description of the tin can tourists of the world and their annual winter season. And it began with homecoming in Sarasota, Thanksgiving in Dade County, and it peaked with Yuletide at the Arcadia Municipal Tourist Camp. And I'll just read a little of that. I like to do this. The Tin Can Tourists of the World was organized in 1916 by tourists who live all or much of the year in trailers or house cars, many of them homemade. Although the ties binding them together are largely sentimental, and I think that's terrific, the tourists maintain an organization with regularly elected officers. This nomadic group begins its annual tour to Florida with a homecoming at Dade City, see Tour 22, in November. With ample leisure, the tin canners then wander about, either singly or in small groups, swimming and sunbathing, attending church and the movies, enjoying long sessions of bridge, checkers, chess, horseshoes, and shuffleboard. At Yuletide, they repair to Arcadia to celebrate the holidays. There are speeches of welcome by city officials, appropriate replies, I love appropriate replies too, and a long automobile parade by the tin canners. Up to 1938, the tin canners held their first celebration of the Florida season every spring at the Sarasota Municipal Tourist Camp, see Sarasota. But the organization has grown so large that the camp has been unable to accommodate them. I can't resist either. Right below this, it says, the Florida Baptist Children's Home, established in 1907, cares for 150 children, operating its own farm, dairy, citrus grove, print shop, and canning factory. Right below that is Nocatee, and then in parentheses, it gives the explanation of what Nocatee is. It's Indian for what is it? And that's a little town. I could keep going, but I won't. As I said, there's enough material for virtually any sort of novelist. Now, fate has saved me from having to write a naturalistic novel, not to mention an anthropomorphic novel or a sports fiction. But for those writers who do or dare, the chapter on sports and recreation caught even my hostile attention. I was especially hypnotized by those rhapsodic lists of fish and small fur-bearing animals, red and gray fox, skunk, raccoon, opossum, otter, all of them promoted, and this hurt my heart, as readily available as targets for visiting hunters. Thus, our ideas change about what we should be promoting as the times change. What interests me most about the guide is that despite the multiplicity of subjects, and they range from zoology to advice to tourists on road services, there is a thread connecting all of these subjects, and that thread is the skeleton of Florida's history. And if one reads the guide from cover to cover and takes in all these details, an entity starts to be built, and one eventually comes away with a very real feeling of what Florida was and is, because all of our roots are there. An historical novelist with Florida in mind could do no better than to start and perhaps end with the guide. The historical chronology at the end of the guide is by far the best I've ever seen, and virtually every entry in the tour section describing Florida's cities and towns contains enough information for half a dozen historic scenarios. Now, I have, as you by this time know, but I'll confess again ingenuously, written an historic novel about Florida, and it is called American Tropic. It starts in the early 16th century when the Spanish first came, and it ends when the Spanish came again in 1959. From a different direction. In fact, the title of that book, I got a lot of things out of it, but the title of the book came from the wonderful bibliography and at the end of this. There was a travel book written, published in 1938 by John E. Dennings Jr. called Our American Tropics. And I thought that was such a good title, I even located the book. Sorry to say that the title is the best thing about the book. Yeah, I borrowed it. What I wanted to do with American Tropic was to give a comprehensive story of the state of Florida and our history. And that's what I found that the guide wanted to do. That was indeed its expressed aim, a comprehensive story of Florida. And it more than achieves its goal, and I hope that I have. I'm sorry to say, as a resource, it does have some major failings. And approaching it as a resource, one has to remember that about the time that it was written, there was a great deal of fear in both our country and all over the world. There was economic fear, we're coming out of the Depression barely, and there was a racial political fear. And, you know, when German cruise boats were still coming to Florida as late as 1938. And when they would pull into Miami the next morning, if you lived in Miami, you would find anti-Semitic literature slipped under your door. It was a fearful time, and I think that shows up in the way the book is written, put together. One result of that fear, that overriding fear, I'm convinced, is the curious absence of virtually any mention of the word Jewish or Jew in the entire book. As a matter of fact, the word Jewish only appears once, and that is in reference to Frederick Delius, who he was living in Florida at the time, and in order to support himself, he got himself a job as an organist in Jacksonville in, and this is a quote, a Jewish synagogue. This, I suppose, as opposed to a Catholic synagogue. There is absolutely no mention of David Yulee's father, who was one of the first great developers and had been given a great deal of land by the Spanish. There's no mention of David Yulee himself, and he was a Jew who was instrumental in making Florida a state. He was our first U.S. senator and the first United States Jewish senator ever. There's no mention of Abraham Myers, who was one of the early American army officers and for whom Fort Myers is named after. And I often like to speak before groups in Fort Myers and tell them that. And there's always a certain number of the group who go, oh, our city, Abraham Myers? And though there's an awful lot said in the book about anti-black sentiments and anti-black laws, anti-Seminole and Indian sentiments, there is not a word said about the extraordinary and virulent anti-Jewish sentiments and even the ghettoization in such places as Miami and Miami Beach and Tampa. Not a word. One suspects if David Yulee had been black or Seminole, he would have been given 16 pages and a picture of his monument. But otherwise, he's barely mentioned in a little statement about Yulee, Florida. I think there are some reasons, some really good, solid reasons for this. As I said, we have to remember the period they were living in. Germany was exporting its own anti-Semitism. The Klan was very active in Florida during that period, and it was fanning its own local anti-Semitism. And the Jews who were involved in this book took what has been a century-long position the Jews have done, and that is we put our heads in the sand, and we try to become part of the mainstream. We weren't. And it seemed to me we should have been singled out as being influential in the history of the state. But there are reasons to understand it. However, if you're a historical novelist or just a person trying to get the facts, you're basing your fiction on the truth, you're going to need something else besides the guide to fill you in on at least that aspect. And that gives rise to another problem which worries me, and that is one has to wonder what other editorial decisions were made which would give a distorted picture, if only by omission, of Florida's history. A much more minor quibble that I had with the guide is the photographs. Given the quality of other WPA photographs of the era, these are really very lackluster, and they're very posed. I mean, if you look at the WPA guide to Key West, for instance, there's some wonderfully evocative shots of geography and people. These, for some reason, don't do it, at least for me. Anyway, that's a minor one. That said, I will tell you that the guide is an extraordinary resource for the novelist. It unlocks the secrets of Florida's history and culture. It's a necessary resource. No formal history of the state even comes close to any who will write about what Wallace Stevens once called venereal soil and Elizabeth Bishop called the state with the prettiest name. Now, incidentally, the guide... Well, I wanted to talk about that how that documentary came out. It did come out. She spent millions of dollars doing it, it looks like to me. And it is filled with big ideas. And it's even bigger sunsets. The trouble is she missed all the small ideas. There are no Cuban bodegas. There are no macadamized shopping malls. There are no shrimper fishermen, no families. She missed a lot of the good stuff. And those are the things, neighborhood doper. She missed what really makes Key West such an attractive magnet for artistic people, especially writers, or what the locals call, and not altogether commonly, us creative types. Now, the guide is an antidote to that sort of posturing, that kind of big idea. And in my book, the guide really is what genuine literature. There's a massing of all these little facts, and they pile up, and they pile up, and they pile up, and the small ideas add up to one very big idea, and that is the state of Florida. Okay, thank you.
Can we take questions now? Are you going to be leaving?
Yeah, I will be shortly.
We have some presentations. Do you wait an hour? Or do you tell you
right now? I don't think I can. No. Sorry.
Well, okay.
Let me get five more.
Yeah, we have some time. So let's have some questions.
Was he a Jewish person, Levy?
Levy was David Yulee. David Yulee changed his name from Levi to Yulee when he married the ex-Kentucky of governor's daughter, who was known as the Madonna. He didn't want to be known as Jewish.
Oh, yeah. Right. But wasn't, how much of Florida, a huge amount, right?
Well, that was that. Most of that was the original Levi Tract, which his father, who came from some island, he had left his wife there, and divorced her, and he moved to. You'll find it all in American Trapper. Yes, I base a lot of my one family on that character. Okay. Are there any other questions? You'd be right. Okay, thanks again. American Tropic. I do cover Miami. Well, I think it's more popular stuff. I do cover Miami, and I was so amazed. I had been coming to Miami Beach since I was 5 years old, which is 1945, and I was thought of it as a Jewish resort. And when I started researching it, I realized that it was an anti-Semitic resort up until the early 30s. Everything went kaboom, and they had to let Jews in. All the Jews had to live below Fifth Street. That was the ghetto. And then in Miami, when Julia Tuttle and Henry Flagler carved it up between them, they had a clause in every lease that said if you rented, leased, or sold to Jews, the land would revert to them. That was the clause. That's a clause in actually a lot of leases. That was the clause that almost got Justice Rehnquist the fate he so richly deserved, but didn't in one of his things. Anyway, so I did cover it a bit. But there's a lot of books about that period. There's one by Isidore Cohen. He was an early Miami haberdasher. It's just marvelous. It's in the libraries.
You discuss any of the Japanese immigration around, Morikami Museum, where that is?
No, I didn't know about that until after the book was published, nor did I think it was. My wife is American Japanese, and one would have thought that we would have gravitated, but we didn't. When did that happen?
You know?
Oh, really? Well, contemporary novels? I like that Carl Hyatt novel recently, especially for drugs, Tourist Season. He wrote a couple of years ago. That's really terrifically funny. And American Tropic is another version. Yes?
Can you tell us what books are available under the
bookstore? Is American Tropic available? It is, actually. Okay, thank you.